Mrs. Nussbaum, what to you was the biggest thing in 1947?
Without hesitating, I'm answering the new look.
The new look, eh?
But why they're calling it the new look, this to me is altogether confusing.
You mean with those long skirts?
Where is the look? There is nothing to see.
Well, have you personally attempted the new look?
When it is first coming out, I am surprising my husband, Pierre.
Oh, good. What was your outfit?
With a long, ravishing camel's hair ballerina skirt.
Yes.
I am wearing a raccoon peasant blouse.
Yes.
Puffing out with leg of mutton sleeves.
I see.
Over black seamless nylon.
Yes.
Is peeking out rhinestone pantalette.
Peeking out.
With cinnamon-colored gaiters.
God.
With this, I am wearing open-toed moccasins.
Yes.
And overall, a baggy weasel cape.
Yes.
Caught at the neck. With a Tootsie Roll. The 10-cent size.
The 10-cent size.
And for a staff, I am carrying a buffalo leg.
A buffalo leg? What? What happened?
When I am coming home, I'm saying, surprise, it is the new look.
Well, what did your husband say?
Pierre also is saying, new look.
New look?
New look for another husband.
Brings us to the little shanty on the simulated bog at the end of the alley. Let's arouse Mr. Cassidy.
Here they walk on the horse.
What do you think was the biggest thing that happened in 1947?
Oh, so many things happened in 1947, me boy.
It's hard to decide.
Really? Well, what were some of the big events?
Well, no, there was that day in Rasputin Rooney's butcher shop.
Yes.
A 300-pound pig come to life on the butcher's block.
Yes.
The pig took the cleaver away from Rooney, chased him in the icebox, and hung Rooney up on a hook.
No, that wouldn't be the answer.
That wouldn't be enough. Well, no. There was the night me Uncle Trilby Cassidy put the live wire in his pocket.
He put a live wire in his pocket? What happened?
Oh, sparks started shooting out of his derby and both of his legs lit up.
Well, that would hardly be the outstanding event of 1947.
Wait a minute. There was the day I went to work. People came from miles around. They couldn't believe their eyes.
I have to take an oath. It was me.
Well, Ajax, that...
Oh, wait a minute. I have it. Now, the outstanding event in 1947... was the Big Four meeting in London.
Well, that's more like it.
The Big Four. No wonder they couldn't agree.
What do you think?
Oh, sitting around in them high-backed chairs, surrounded by diplomatic protocol.
But...
afraid to cross their legs for fear their stripy pants would get baggy in the knees.
Well, look...
Oh, afraid to turn their heads for fear they'd cut their throats on them stiff-wing collars. How could any four men agree?
Well, do you think you can help the Big Four?
E-boy, I can have the Big Four throwing their arms around each other and seeing eye to eye in 20 minutes.
How?
When I take the Big Four into Kerrigan's cozy corner.
Yes.
I'd escort the Big Four into the back room.
Yes.
I'd sit the Big Four down at a table.
And?
I'd say to Kerrigan, give the Big Four a fifth. Goodbye, you.
Sisters. With the pompous Al Goodman atop his podium conducting, the DeMarco sing Near You, girls.
Near you, near you, near you, I'd be more than content.
pause briefly for sponsor identification. We have just previewed a few bars of Serenade of the Bells through the courtesy of Maestro Al Goodman and 25 men who are playing New Year's Eve in the Catskills, where they will be known as the Sour Cream Serenaders. Now, ladies, would you say Portland?
Yes?
Have you noticed sort of a used fragrance rampant in here?
Yes, it's me.
Well, how have you suddenly acquired this soiled pungent?
Mama gave me some perfume for Christmas.
Perfume? Oh.
It's like surrender.
Like surrender? And what is yours called?
Fight back.
Fight back. Well, it certainly is. You are exuding the aroma of a fawn's lair. Oh, yes. All my friends in radio remembered me. Mary Margaret McBride sent me a wicker muffler with the names of all of her sponsors painted on it, 7 feet long. It has spats on the end of it. You can walk in it if you like. Jack Eigen sent me a big toffanetti potato. Somebody sent me a cuckoo clock.
A cuckoo clock?
Yes, but it's broken. The cuckoo comes out backwards.
You exchange it?
Well, I took it back to the store, and what a time I had.
What happened?
Well, last Friday afternoon, I put the cuckoo clock under my arm and started over to Gimbledale's department store. Well, this is Gimbledale's. I wonder where the clock department is. I'll ask at this information booth. Pardon me, miss.
I'm sorry, sir. This gentleman was first.
Oh.
Now, what is it you want?
I want you to show me how to get out of this inferno of humanity.
Monty Woolley. Monty, what are you up to? Lost in a department store.
I am doing my Christmas shopping.
But Christmas was last Thursday.
I have to do my shopping after Christmas.
Well, why?
To avoid those nauseating incidents that occur at this season of the year due to my alleged resemblance to that mythical busybody, Santa Claus.
You are involved in nauseating incidents?
With depressing regularity. Just a few minutes ago, a vile little cherub kicked me in the fibula.
Yeah.
He said, I told you I wanted a machine gun. What do you mean, bringing me that umbrella?
No kidding.
And last Christmas, while I was shopping, some little brat climbed up on my back and said, what are you going to bring me for Christmas, Santa?
Yes.
I said, little boy, put your ear close to my mouth.
And when the little boy put his ear close to your mouth,
I bit him.
Monty, you bit the little boy?
Yes, and he tasted very sour. He must have had an acid condition.
But at Christmas time, Monty, everyone is supposed to be gay.
Gay? Fred, have you ever thought of Christmas from the viewpoint of a turkey?
Well, no.
At Christmas time, the turkey mortality rate is staggering.
But, Monty...
Fred, how would you like to be a turkey?
Well...
You're running around a barnyard in Maryland with your turkey wife and your little turkey children.
Yes?
Suddenly a cold hand is clamped over your wattle.
Over my wattle?
You know, your dark meat is being consumed by a total stranger in Lindy's.
Monty, Christmas.
Oh, Christmas, bah. The ridiculous gifts people send each other at Christmas.
Well, what did you get, Monty?
A cellophane smoking jacket with asbestos sleeves.
Yes.
A dozen handkerchiefs with the word Gesundheit embroidered in the color.
Yes.
The complete works of Ilka Chase with ladyfinger bookmarks.
What? Ladyfinger bookmarks?
Well, if you get hungry while you're reading, you can eat the bookmark.
Oh, I see. Well, where did you spend Christmas, Monty?
I always spend the holidays up at my home in Saratoga.
Saratoga, say it must be wonderful.
Yes, Fred. I have a real old-fashioned. old-fashioned Christmas.
A real old-fashioned Christmas.
Yes, Christmas morning, the minute I arise, I have three old-fashioned.
Fine.
And then I sit down and turn on my radio.
You tune in a Yule program?
The annual broadcast of Dickens' Christmas Carol.
And you listen?
I spend an entire hour hissing Lionel Barrymore.
How can you be so bitter?
Well, it's my nature, friend. As a boy, I took great delight in letting the air out of little girls' bicycle tires.
Oh, Monty, you're kidding. I saw you in your new picture, The Bishop's Wife. Why, the whole plot is about Christmas. You and Cary Grant are wonderful.
Well, that's why I came on from Hollywood, Fred. I made a personal appearance at the opening of The Bishop's Wife.
Oh, did Cary Grant come on, too?
No. No, but I think the audience was expecting it.
Well, how do you mean?
Well, when I walked out on the stage...
Yes?
Everyone shrieked, "Look, it isn't Grant, it's Lee."
What? Monty, nice to have seen you. I've got to scoot along, Monty. I have to exchange this cuckoo clock.
Cuckoo clock? What's wrong with it?
Well, it keeps time all right, but when the clock strikes, the cuckoo flies out backward.
Backward?
Look, I'll show you. You see?
You say that clock came from this store, Gimbledale's?
Yes.
I'll get this clock exchanged for you.
Uh-huh.
I have a credit card here.
Good.
You won't have to stand in line. You'll be out in 10 minutes.
Well, now, don't bother, Monty.
No bother, Fred. I'm well known in this store.
Yes?
The exchange department's on the third floor. Follow me.
Let's go, Monty.
Fred, third floor.
Here comes a floor walker.
Floor walker?
Yes, can I help you, gentlemen?
My name is Monty Woolley. I have a credit card here at Gimbledale's.
Oh, yes, Mr. Woolley. What is your problem?
My friend here has a cuckoo clock.
Yes, it's broken. I'll show you.
There, you see?
Well, what's wrong with that? The cuckoo came out, didn't it?
Well, yes, but it came out backwards.
With all those feathers, how can you tell the front end of the cuckoo from the back end?
The front end of the cuckoo has a bill on it. Haven't you ever seen the front end of a duck?
But you're not returning a duck.
One more word from you, and I'll take that gardenia out of your buttonhole and thrash you to death with it.
Now, wait. Monty, please, why argue? Monty, I just want to exchange the clock.
Oh, an exchange.
Yes.
You'll just step into that line.
Line? I have a credit card.
Oh, a credit card. Well, go to the complaint department next aisle over.
Now, come on, Fred. I'll have to get you out of here in ten minutes.
Well, here's the complaint department right here.
Oh, yes, yes. Miss?
Yeah?
My friend here has a complaint.
A complaint? All I hear all day long is complaints. Just once, I'd like to have somebody look through my lattice and say, "Lauren, I ain't got no complaints. Everything's okay."
Miss, I am not interested in your sordid and ungrammatical soliloquy.
Ah, your father's nibbling.
Your grandmother wears sport shoes.
And your uncle's got no nostrils.
Your mother's left leg is a pogo stick.
Now, Monty, please.
I'm sorry, Fred, I lost my head.
Miss, I have a defective cuckoo clock here.
Yes, my friend wants to exchange it.
Yes.
What's wrong with it?
Show her, Fred.
All right, now look, miss.
So what's wrong with that?
Well, the cuckoo comes out backwards.
Maybe he's bashful.
Oh, this is ridiculous. For your information, miss, my name is Monty Woolley. I have a credit card.
A credit card? Why, you say so. Take the clock to the credit window down this aisle.
Now, look, Monty, I'll bring the clock back some other
Nonsense,
time.
Nonsense, Fred. I'll have you out of here in 10 minutes.
But, Monty...
Here's the credit window right here. Pardon me.
Right you are, gentlemen, at your service.
My name is Monty Woolley.
I know. I've seen you in pictures.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't particularly care for your work.
That is beside the point.
My favorite actor is James Mason.
I don't care if your favorite actor is Buster Crabbe. I'm here on business.
I beg your pardon. You want a credit?
No, it's not. It's for me. I want to exchange a cuckoo clock.
The cuckoo is defective.
Yes, this is the clock right here. Look. See?
I say, the cuckoo has no sense of direction.
What the clock needs is a new cuckoo.
Have you tried the Audubon Society?
The Audubon Society. This molting, backfiring monstrosity was purchased in this store, Gimbledale.
Yes, it was given to me for Christmas.
Well, it teaches us a lesson, doesn't it?
A lesson?
Never look a gift horse in the mouth.
He is looking it in the mouth.
It comes out backwards.
That, I should say, is your problem.
Quit stalling now. My friend wants some action.
Quiet, you. Remember, I've seen you in pictures.
I have an insane desire to take your toupee off and butter the inside of it.
Don't get excited.
Why shouldn't I get excited? I have a credit card.
A credit card? For your information, you're at the wrong window. Get a voucher at window 7.
Window 7, eh? Well, come on, Fred.
Now, look, Monty, I'll keep the
card. No, Fred, my mind's made up. I'm seeing this thing through.
Well, I can't spend the whole day.
I'll have you out in 10 minutes. Here's window 7. Miss.
Oh, it's your two crumbs again.
I'm looking for window number 7.
This is number 7.
I thought you were in the complaint department.
Just after you left, I got promoted.
Well, look, miss.
I know, your cuckoo comes out backwards.
Now, wait.
Miss, I have had about enough of your moronic sarcasm.
Well, why don't you get in the clock and look out every hour, Bristlehead? Your cuckoo.
This insubordinate is reprehensible. I have a credit card. I demand to see the manager. Where's the manager's office?
Oh, Mr. Heffelwhite, that door behind the water cooler.
Now, come on, Fred.
No, Monty, I've got to go.
I'll have you out in 10 minutes.
Here's the manager's office. It says Mr. Heffelwhite.
Now, follow me.
Yes?
Mr. Heffelwhite?
Yes, but I can't see you without an appointment. If you insist on staying in here, I'll have to turn my head.
My name is Woolley. I have a credit card.
Yes, Mr. Woolley, is something wrong?
Wrong, Mr. Heffelwhite? My friend, Mr. Allen, has been trying to exchange a cuckoo clock for the last 3 hours.
Yes.
He has been insulted in every department but women's wear.
It's true. If this is true, Mr. Woolley, heads will roll. I'll get out a memo immediately in triplicate. How about this clock?
Well, it's this cuckoo clock I have here.
The cuckoo comes out backwards.
Yes, watch this, Mr. Heffelwhite.
The missing clock.
Missing?
It was stolen 2 weeks ago.
Stolen?
Who gave you the clock, Fred?
Well, I don't know, Monty. It was under my Christmas tree. There was no tag on it.
A likely story. This clock was part of a $100,000 jewelry haul made by shoplifters.
Just a minute, Heffelwhite. I'm no shoplifter.
Alan, you'll get 20 years.
20 years? Monty.
Don't worry, Fred.
But 20 years.
I'll have you out in 10 minutes.
Before we remind you to remember bluebonnet margarine and tenderly feel your shopping days, I want to thank Monty Woolley for his visit tonight. Next week, our guest will be Mr. James Mason. Thank you, good night, and a happy new year. Good night.
Thank you.
Good night.
This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
Every go signal reminds you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. The Signal Oil Program. The Signal Oil Company and your neighborhood Signal dealer bring you another curious story by The Whistler. Tonight, Lie or Consequences.
I am the Whistler, and I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Presently, I'll tell you of nameless terrors of which they dare not speak. Within the human character, the line between good and evil is a thin and waving one. And very often, the one small impulse for good will outweigh and nullify the bad. Such was the case with Michael Cobb. Mike wasn't bad, really. It happened while he was a kid, before he knew any better. He'd gotten into trouble, gone to prison, served a stretch. Now he's out, and he's learned his lesson. He's proving that. He's going straight, working hard at his job in the office of a large department store. He's married to a girl he loves, and he's happy.
Delicious. Oh, nobody can cook a better breakfast than you, darling.
Thank you, sir.
Now, Mike, don't bolt your coffee.
I gotta run. I'll be late.
Well, a couple of minutes won't make any difference.
Well, maybe not most days, but today is gonna be a big one. The last shopping day before Christmas, you know. Stores will be jammed. We'll be swamped with work until late tonight. Besides, I don't want to spoil my record. 6 months and I haven't been late to work once.
I know. It's fine. I'm sure the store appreciates it.
Yeah, Lane, I think they do, too. I really think they like me down there. You know, like my work and everything.
Oh, sure, Mike. How could they help liking you?
No, I mean, well, I'm beginning to feel like all that stuff is all forgotten. Almost like something that never happened.
It is. It is forgotten, Mike. Everything's different now.
Yeah, it is. Oh, this is going to be a lot different Christmas than the last one, isn't it?
Yes, Mike.
You were wonderful, Elaine. Coming to see me, sticking by me. Oh, darling, I promise you there'll never be another Christmas like that. Never.
I know there won't, Mike. From now on, they're all going to be really Merry Christmas.
Yeah, you bet. Oh, gosh, that reminds me. I haven't got your presents yet. I'll have to run out my lunch hour and find something.
Now, Mike, you're not going to go spending a lot of money on me. Oh, maybe next year we'll be more on our feet.
No, never you mind. I'll get you what I don please. Oh, my gosh. Now, I will be late if I don't run.
Hey, here's your hat.
Oh, thanks. Well, goodbye, darling. If I don't get home before midnight, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas.
Yes, it looks like a Merry Christmas for you at last, doesn't it, Mike? For the first time in your life, almost. A real Merry Christmas. You notice the smiles on people's faces as they walk down the street. You get sort of a kick out of the fancy red and green draped windows of the store. The holly smells good in the elevator. And you chuckle as you pass the toy department with a perspiring Santa Claus pulling on his red coat. Then into the office, everybody's smiling. Yeah, you know what, Mike? Maybe you're getting that thing they call the Christmas spirit.
Well, morning, George. Merry Christmas.
Hi, Mike. You're pretty cheerful this morning, aren't you?
Oh, why not? It's almost Christmas, the day of good cheer. Well, what's the matter with you, sourpuss?
Nuts, Humboldt.
Uh-oh, the boss on the rampage again, huh? Well, what is it this time?
You haven't heard?
No, what?
Somebody lifted another $1,000 out of the receipts last night.
What, again?
Yeah, it makes about $10,000 that's been missing in the last 6 months.
Well, no wonder Mr. Humboldt's upset.
The detectives are in there with him right now, and they've got old Gus, a night watchman, in for questioning. I suppose we'll all be on the carpet like the last time.
Well, gee, that's not so good. $10,000. Hey, that's grand larceny.
Yeah, and the cops are probably getting pretty sore about not pinning it on somebody. Now, look, here comes old Gus, fresh from the Inquisition.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Humboldt.
Gus. Hey, Gus.
Yeah, Mr. Osborne?
Are they playing questions and answers in there again, Gus?
Yeah. There was you this time, there was you that time. The only time I got to sleep when they called me down here for this. What for would I want to steal money for? I got a wife. Fine wife. 4 kids. I steal money, I go to jail. They starve. What for would I steal?
Sure, Gus. But I know why you're so worked up about it.
Yeah?
You probably had to admit where you were last night between 12 and 1 o'clock.
How come you know that, where I was?
Go on. Everybody in the store knows that, Gus. It's a standing joke. Everybody knows you eat your lunch every morning between 12 and 1. They know you go up to the 13th floor and stretch out on one of those divans in the Louis the 15th room, the classiest in the joint.
Okay, so what's wrong with that? I got to eat. Why not in style?
Sure, only for that hour. Anybody could come in and move out the other 12 floors, and you'd never know it.
All right, so what? Maybe that is when somebody stole money. I do not know. I only know I did not steal. And this is the only time I got to sleep, when they have to go asking me questions.
What a character.
Hey, is that true about his breakfast from 12 to 1?
Sure. There's a night watchman for you.
That probably explains why they're so sure the thief is somebody inside the store. Somebody who knows about Gus and what time he won't be on this floor.
Yeah, could be. Uh-oh, that's Humboldt. Yes, Mr. Humboldt. Oh, yes. It's right away, sir. Just as I thought. It's my turn now. Well, if I start screaming, you'll know he's putting me on the rack.
Okay, I'll bring a branding iron to your rescue.
Don't laugh yet. You'll probably be next. If Humboldt really decides to catch a thief, he'll catch one by hook or crook.
Merry Christmas, Mike. Oh, now, what's the matter? You don't seem as happy as you were. Something happened to dampen the Christmas spirit, maybe? Something you can't describe, can't even put your finger on? Just a funny sinking feeling? Forget it. George Osborne has been in and out of Humboldt's office, and almost the whole day has gone by and nothing's happened. And everything seems to have calmed down. In fact, it's George's turn to have the Christmas spirit.
I really didn't expect it this year, but there it was in my pay envelope. Nice and crisp and green. With the best Christmas wishes of the J.C. Deaver's store.
Oh, gee, that's swell, George.
Yeah, real honest-to-gosh Christmas bonus. I can sure use it.
Who couldn't?
I don't know whether you'll get one or not, Mike. You've only been here 6 months. Then maybe. By the way, why don't you mosey in and pick up your pay? It's almost 9 o'clock. We close in 5 minutes.
Well, I guess I better wait for Mr. Humboldt to call me. Golly, I thought we'd get paid earlier. Still haven't bought Elaine's present.
Ah, well, don't worry. Most of the smaller stores will still be open for a couple of hours.
Yeah, sure. But I thought I'd get her something she liked real well in a little store up on 10th Avenue. Oh, well, it'll be open till late.
Say, I wonder if they found out anything about the 10 grand. Boy, they've really questioned everybody around, though.
They didn't question me. In fact, they've never questioned me about it. I don't quite understand that.
Oh, well, I don't know. I guess you got such an honest face or something.
Yeah.
Uh-oh. Yes, Mr. Humboldt. Well, yes, sir. Yes, sir, I'll send him right in. Well, maybe we spoke too soon. He wants to see you.
Oh?
On the other hand, maybe he just wants to hand you your Christmas bonus in person. After all, you are getting to be the fair-haired boy around here these days.
I better go in.
You might even be in line for a promotion. You can't tell.
Okay, okay. You wanted to see me, Mr. Humboldt?
Yes, oh, yes, Cobb, Cobb. Sit down, sit down.
Thank you, sir.
Cobb, you've been with us 6 months now.
Yes, sir.
And I must admit that in that time you've demonstrated an admirable aptitude for the work.
Thanks, Mr. Humboldt.
Yes, in fact, there's been some discussion of raising your salary, promoting you. I even talked to Mr. Prentice, the manager, about it myself.
Well, thanks, Mr. Humboldt.
Yes, and that's why I regret very much to tell you this. I must inform you that we're forced to dispense with your services as of tonight.
Dispense? You mean I'm fired?
I'm afraid that's it. Yeah, your 2 weeks' pay is in this envelope.
Wait a minute. If I'm been so good, why am I being fired?
I'm not at liberty to offer any explanations. I have my orders just
the
same.
It's got something to do with this missing money, hasn't it?
I told
you. This is your way of telling me you think I took it, isn't it?
Now, calm
down. That's it, isn't it, Mr. Humboldt? You've questioned everyone else in the department. With me, you figure questions are unnecessary, don't you?
Well, since you put it that way, Cobb, naturally, we must take into consideration your past.
You knew about my prison record. I told you about it. What I've told you about if I was going to steal again?
I'm not accusing you of stealing again. I only say we can't afford to take chances. We simply find it advisable.
All right. I understand. I understand a lot of things now, Mr. Humboldt. Thanks. Thanks, Mr. Humboldt, for the Christmas bonus.
Hey, Mike, wait a minute. Well, did you get it? Did he give you a Christmas bonus?
Yeah. Yeah, I got a Christmas bonus, all right.
Hey, what's up? What's the matter?
Oh, nothing. I'll tell you about it later. I'm leaving now.
Oh, yeah, you're in a hurry. But wait, I almost forgot. With my bonus, I can pay you the 30 bucks I owe you.
Huh?
Here. 10, 20, 30. That ought to help with that present for your wife, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, thanks, George. Thanks.
Merry Christmas, Mike. Yeah. That premonition you had this morning was right, wasn't it? That funny, sinking feeling. Now you know, don't you, Mike? You knew it all the time, really. All this past 6 months, you've been kidding yourself. That dream bubble has burst. Merry Christmas, Mike. The crowds are still cheerful on the streets. The windows are still bright and gay, and the holly still spices the air. But you don't see or feel or smell. No, there's only the sensation of a chill wind cutting you to the bone as you wander the dark streets, not knowing or caring where you are.
Hello, Michael. Merry Christmas.
Huh? Oh, hello, Reverend Ewart. I didn't see you.
So I noticed. I was just getting home from my last-minute shopping. Won't you come in for a moment? A cup of tea, perhaps?
Why, no, I...
Oh, come on. I haven't seen you for a long time. That is, for a chat. Besides, it's chilly out. A cup of hot tea will warm you up. You look as if you could stand warming up, Michael. Come in.
No, no, I've got to get along.
Oh, come now. That lovely wife of yours won't miss you for a few more minutes.
I tell you, I've got to go.
Very well, Michael. I won't keep you.
Oh, I'm sorry, Reverend. I didn't mean to, you know...
Well, I understand, son. You're troubled. Is there anything I can do?
No, no, I'm all right.
Well, I know you too well, Michael. I've known you all my life. Now, I've helped you before, haven't I? Why?
I don't know. I don't know whether you did or not. All that stuff you told me about turning over a new leaf, forgetting the past, I believed it.
Oh, yes, of course.
Hal, maybe you should have told it to some other people instead of me. It just don't work, Reverend. It just don't work. All that stuff about being good and doing good.
It
don't pay you off.
It does, Michael. It does. You must believe that. Even a little good done brings a great reward.
Yeah, maybe to some people. Only maybe some of us are behind an eight ball we can't get around.
Michael, please come in. I feel I must talk to
Not you. Not tonight, Reverend. But all the talking I can stand. Now I'm going to do my own thinking. And I know what I'm going to do. You can bet your sweet life I know just what I'm going to do.
Yes, your mind is made up now, isn't it, Mike? Humboldt made it up for you, didn't he? You hate him, don't you, Mike? And all the smug people like him who've never done a stretch and stir. They're your enemies, aren't they, Mike? Whether you wanted them to be or not. And you're just one of the cell rats. Okay, if that's the way it is, that's the way you'll play it. What's that? Footsteps following you? Maybe if you stop by this lighted window. Yeah, you were right, Mike. They're following you, all right. Two of them. You saw them duck into that doorway when you stopped and turned around.
Tailing me. They got dicks tailing me. Why, sure, you dope. They wouldn't let you just walk out of there. They think you took the money. They're going to tail you, hound you, track you down. Okay. Okay, if they think I took the money, I'll give them reason to. This time, I will take it.
You are listening to The Whistler, brought to you by your friend, the Signal Oil Company. Marketers of famous Signal gasoline, your best buy today. Remember to let every go signal remind you, you do go farther with Signal gasoline.
Merry Christmas, Mike. A very Merry Christmas, isn't it? 6 months of going straight and you've given it up. You're going back to the store and get your share of those days' receipts. Yes, it's all so simple, isn't it, Mike? It'll soon be 12 o'clock midnight, and old Gus will be up in the Louis 15th room on the 13th floor. The safe in Humboldt's office will be a cinch. You've seen it many times. And as for the two dicks tailing you now, it'll be duck soup to shake 'em. Duck soup. That's right. You're heading up 10th Avenue now. You can double back and... What's wrong, Mike? Why are you stopping? Could it be that tune, the brightly lighted window, the old man standing back there? Of course, now you remember. 10th Avenue. This is old Mr. Samuel's little store. This is it, where you're going to buy Elaine her Christmas present. And there it is. What you heard, the music box, sitting on the counter next to the open door, playing.
Well, good evening, Michael, and Merry Christmas.
Hiya, Mr. Samuels.
You came in just in time. I was just about to close up. I guess down at your big store, you've been closed for a long time. But here, well, we little fellows have to stay open to get all the business we can. What can I do for you?
Is this the music box that Elaine likes so well?
Ah, yes, that is the one. She was very taken with it. Ah, her eyes sparkled when she looked at it.
Yeah, there's a powder puffer, something inside, isn't it?
Ah, that is right. And when you open it, it plays the little tune. So. Yes, she was saying how it was her favorite tune.
Okay. How much is it?
Well, it's... It's usually priced at 75, but I'll give it to you and the young lady for 50.
$50?
Well, yes. You see, it's a genuine antique, and it's the best thing I have in this store.
Well, I'm sorry, but that's more than I'd figured out.
Oh, I'm sorry, too. I would have let you have it for less if I could, but 50 is the lowest.
Sure, sure. Well, okay, forget it.
I'm sorry. Come back again.
Now what's the matter, Mike? Why are you stopping? Could it be you can't make up your mind? Could it be you're thinking about the music box, about Elaine, about Christmas? Yes. This may be your last Christmas with her, you know. Your last chance to give her a decent present with clean money. Money you earned. It might be a nice gesture, eh, Mike? A little token of all that might have been.
Oh, Mr. Samuels, I'll take it. Wrap it up as a gift, and I'll take it.
Merry Christmas, Mike. That's what's written across the package. It was going to be a symbol for a wonderful new life, wasn't it? And now it's an ironic farewell. Your last attempt at doing good, as Reverend Hewitt called it. Too bad it won't bring you that great reward he promised. It won't have a chance. Because there are those two dicks still following you. And you, you're heading for J.C. Deaver's department store, office of Henry Humble, and the interior of his safe. It's almost 12 midnight, and you have to duck those guys.
30 girls, 30, the greatest little show in town, starring Fitzy Laverne and her 30 raving beauties. A new show just started, only 40 cents. Ticket, mister?
Huh? Oh, yeah, yeah.
40 cents, thank you, sir. A new show just started. Hurry, 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 ladies and gentlemen. It's the greatest little show in town.
You're doing great, Mike. Those dicks will follow you in, but you won't be there, will you? No. You're heading for that exit sign down at the side. Through the curtains, push out through the door, and there you are. In the alley. And free. Okay. Now, up to the street. Lose yourself in the crowd. Turn down Fifth toward the store. You're okay now. No need to look back. Or is there? They're there. You didn't shake them after all. They were wise to that trick, and they were waiting for you outside the theater. Yes, you should have known. Now what? Maybe you've got an idea. Yes, a good idea, a honey. Why not lead them to the store? Sure, that's where they expect you to go. But beat them there and hide, down in the freight dock, behind one of those big crates. They'll never find you in that mess. Then when they get tired looking, you'll be able to slip in and do the job. How's that? Brilliant. Yes, brilliant. Yes, here's the store. And there they are, a quarter of a block behind. When you hit the alley, you'll run for it. Make a dash back to the back. And you'll be so far ahead then, they won't know whether you've got in or not. And you'll fool them entirely. You'll have them searching the whole store. Okay, here it is. Okay, you made it. You left them way behind. Here's the freight dock.
Okay, come on, coppers. Just try and find me in here.
Found it. Now we've left. I told you knew we were following him.
Sure, sure. But let's not waste time. He had plenty of time to get in, probably with his employee's key.
Okay, okay. Get out your skeleton and let's go in after him.
Worked like a charm, didn't it, Mike? You're sitting here in your crate, comfortably waiting, while they search the entire store. They've been there long enough to do it. It's almost one. If they don't hurry, you'll have Gus to worry about. Not that that's too much of a worry. But wait, hold it.
Well, that does it. Yeah, too bad. Hey, flash your lighter on. He could have ducked into one of these crates here.
Yeah, but we never find him that mess. He could play hide and seek with us there for days.
Yeah, you're right. I guess we might as well call it a day. It's a fine way to spend Christmas Eve anyway. Come on, let's go home.
Okay, I'm right beside you.
like Merry Christmas. This is better than you expected. They're leaving, actually going away, leaving the place to your tender mercies. You won't have to dodge them coming out. They aren't going to camp out in Humboldt's office. They're actually walking away, down the alley, and you're set.
Good Lord, the music box. Something's wrong. It's gone. I can't stop. I can't.
Hey, Joe, listen. Yeah, I hear it. Come on, right over here.
I've got to stop it. I got
to. Okay, right here. In this crate.
Too late.
Okay, Cobb. We finally cornered you. Come on out.
No use hiding in there now, Cab. Come on, come on, come on. We want to talk to you.
Yeah, I know. I got the idea. Okay. Okay, you got me.
Yeah. Thanks for the music. Led us right to the dance floor.
Yeah, that's the great reward the minister was talking about. Great.
I don't get you.
No, you wouldn't. It's a private little joke on me.
Yeah? Well, that music maybe did you a big favor, Cobb.
Favor?
That's right. Maybe you'll see what I mean if you'll answer a few questions for us.
I don't see why I should.
You got nothing to be afraid of, kid, if you'll just answer a couple of questions straight.
I'll answer one. I didn't do it. I had nothing to do with
it. Okay, you had nothing to do with it. We didn't ask you that question. Well, answer this. You bought that music box at a store on 10th Avenue a while ago, didn't you?
You know I did. You saw me buy it.
And you paid for it with two 20s and a 10,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Well, part of that money was marked. It was money that had been stolen from Deaver's department store.
I tell you, it wasn't stolen. That was the dough I got in my pay envelope.
All of it? Didn't somebody else give you part of it?
No, I just earned the whole thing.
Didn't George Osborne give you part of it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he did.
Oh.
He paid me $30 he owed me.
Okay. Now, this is very important. How did Osborne pay you? In what denomination of bills?
Well, I... Yeah. Yeah, I remember. He gave me 3 tens.
Tens? You're sure?
Sure, I'm sure.
And the 20s came to you in your pay envelope, huh?
Yeah.
You'll swear to that in court?
Of course.
Okay. That does it. Thanks, Cobb.
Hey, wait. You mean... That's all you wanted me for?
It was enough. You just proved for us who stole that 10 grand from the store. And the way you were acting, we'd almost thought it was you. We hadn't have known better all the time.
But that's not the end of the story. The Whistler will bring it to you in just a moment. Meantime, Signal Oil Company joins with 1,800 Signal gasoline dealers throughout the West from Canada to Mexico in hoping that this has been a good Christmas for you. It wasn't the Christmas we had all hoped and prayed for. There were too many empty places at the table, too many empty places in our hearts. As we look back, we may wonder if perhaps we didn't give quite enough. Not quite enough of our effort, of our money, and of our blood, which can mean life itself to a boy at the front. Yet even the regrets that may tinge this season's gladness can prove its greatest blessing if they fire us to new determination, to new and greater effort through the coming year, until our prayers are finally answered and peace again returns to heal this confused and torn world. Yes, if, as this Christmas of 1944 draws to a close, we will rededicate ourselves to this, our job, we may, each of us, hasten the realization of that ancient promise, peace on earth, goodwill toward men. And now, back to the Whistler.
Well, quite surprising, isn't it? The police didn't suspect Mike at all. You see, it was this way. Because of his record, the cops began to tail Mike in the very beginning, when the money first began to be missed. Twice they had him under observation at the very time the money was stolen, though they knew he didn't do it. But they kept watching him in the hope he would lead them to the real thief, and he did. Yes, because when things got hot, the thief finally tried to frame Mike by giving him some of the stolen money. Marked money this time. George Osborne? Oh, no. In fact, Osborne almost gummed things up by paying his debts. The detectives hadn't counted on that. That's why they had to be sure which bills Osborne gave Mike. The tens weren't marked, the 20s were. The 20s Mike got in his pay envelope from Humboldt. Yes, Henry Humboldt, the office manager. You see, things were getting too hot for him. The trail was getting too close. He knew the money was marked, and he knew the detectives were watching Mike. So he gave him some of the marked bills in his severance pay, trying to frame him. It couldn't have worked, of course, but Humboldt didn't know that, and neither did Mike. And Mike almost did something he'd have regretted all his life. He almost went back to a life of crime. Yes, if the music box hadn't have jammed and started playing just when it did, and the detectives had gone off, Mike's life would have gone down the skid. Because it did play when it did. Well, next week he'll be back at the store, in a better job. Yes, and he got a Christmas bonus, too. They saw to that after Humboldt was arrested. And all because the music box played. Maybe that's why Mike said...
No, sir. That music box sits right there on the table where everybody can see it.
Darling, I really think it means as much to you as it does to me.
Oh, I guess maybe it does, Elaine. Just like the Reverend Hewitt says, a little good brings a great reward. Yeah. For the rest of my life, that little gadget's going to mean a Merry Christmas. Darling, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Mike.
Monday at 9 o'clock, the Signal Oil program will bring you another strange tale by the Whistler. The Signal Oil program is broadcast for your entertainment by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil, and by your neighborhood Signal Oil dealer, who is at your service daily to keep your car running for the duration. The Signal Oil program, produced by George W. Allen, with music by Wilbur Hatch, is transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Bob Anderson speaking for your friend, the Signal Oil Company, and suggesting once again that you let every go signal remind you that you do go farther with Signal gasoline. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
The Jell-O program, starring Jack Benny with Mary Livingston and Phil Harris and his orchestra. The orchestra opens the program with I Feel a Song Coming On. It's in the air around you. It's written in people's faces. It's anywhere and everywhere. The wonderful excitement that comes with Christmas week. Now, when spirits are high and appetites are keen, Jell-O is the perfect dessert for you to serve. For Jell-O's festive, shining colors, its delicious fresh fruit flavor are right in keeping with the gaiety of the season. So let Jell-O help you celebrate your holidays. Serve it in any one of its six delicious flavors. Flavors unusually rich because they come from fresh, ripe fruit. But just remember that there is only one Jell-O, and only Jell-O brings you that extra rich fruit flavor. So make no mistake. Insist on the real thing. Insist on genuine Jell-O. We bring you a man who stands for good, wholesome entertainment, who stands for bright, sparkling humor. In fact, a man who stands for almost anything, Jack Benny.
Thank you. Thank you. Hello again. This is Standing Jack Benny talking. Listen, Don, I may be easygoing and all that, but there's a limit to just how much I will stand. I think you found that out the past few weeks.
But I've never really seen you blow up, Jack.
Well, that's because I managed to keep myself under control. But if I ever lose my temper, well, I just hope I'm not around when it happens.
Oh, Jack, you haven't such a temper. Why, I've heard you argue with Phil Harris, and you've been as gentle as a lamb.
Yes, Don, but you'll never know the battle that goes on inside of me. How I have to fight to hold myself back.
Well, that's generally a nice, safe quarrel.
Yes.
Jack, I don't want to interfere, but I do think that since Christmas is so near that you and Phil ought to make up.
No, Don. The wound is too deep. You see, you only know me on the surface, but there are really two Jack Bennies. There's the patient, amiable, fun-loving fellow you see around the studio. And then there's that other me. Stark, savage, primitive. A throwback to the Stone Age. I tell you, Don, one minute I'm as meek as a mouse, and then all of a sudden I'm Vesuvius erupting.
My, my.
Well, anyway, I'm through coddling people around here, and that goes for Phil Harris or anybody else. You know, you can go just so far, and then the worm turns.
You're right, Jack.
I'll say I am.
Hello, worm.
Well, I haven't turned yet. You better watch your step, too, Murray. What I just said about Phil goes for everybody on this program.
I'm not worried about you. I've got my own troubles. You know, I just had an awful fight with myself.
You did?
You may not know it, Jack, but there are two Mary Livingstons.
Oh, there are?
Yes. There's the quiet, home-loving me, who spends her time in the kitchen.
I see.
And then there's the other me, wild, reckless, with a yen for caviar and cheap jewelry.
Oh, so you've got a dual personality, too.
Have I? I'm a regular Dr. Jekyll and Mrs. Hyde.
Well, say, Don, did Phil get here yet?
Oh, yes, Jack. He's right on time tonight.
He must have read my thoughts last week. Believe me, it's good to put your foot down once in a while.
Hello, Mary.
Hello, Jack.
Hello, Kenny. Say, what kind of a hello was that?
That was my other self talking.
Hey, Don, look who's got another self.
Oh, yeah? I've got two me's, too.
Oh, you have, huh?
Sure. There's one me that you all know around the studio, good-natured, dumb, and unconscious.
Oh.
And then there's the real me, smart, bright, and witty.
Why don't you bring him around sometime?
Oh, Mary, leave him alone.
That guy don't know enough to come in out of the rain.
He does, too.
Come in where?
Forget it, Kenny. It doesn't rain in California anyway.
It doesn't?
No.
Then what keeps falling out of the sky? Orange juice?
Well, maybe the weather has a dual personality, too. You know, there are two sides to everything and everyone. Don't you think so, Don?
Positively. And now that you brought it up, you know, Jack, you may not believe this, but there are really two Don Wilsons.
Oh, I can see that, Don. But a little dieting will take care of that, you know.
Oh, you're laughing at my expanse.
No. I'm serious.
But all kidding aside, I too have another self. Oh. There's the quiet, retiring me who just says, Jell-O is the fastest-selling gelatin dessert in the world, and every day millions of people eat it.
I see.
And then there's that other me that says the Jell-O has six delicious flavors, strawberry, raspberry, cherry, orange, lemon, and lime.
Why, Don, you frighten me.
Oh,
quit, Playboy. Don, go back to your mother. can tell, she comes from Dixie, conducted by Phil Harris, who also has a dual personality. By that I mean he's a two-timer. You know, during every number, he waves one hand at the orchestra and the other at the girls in the audience. And it's got to stop.
All right, I'll quit waving at the orchestra.
Well, at least that'll help the music. Oh, you've even poisoned the boys in the band against me.
I have not.
You haven't? Then why don't they laugh at my joke?
Why don't you say something funny?
I don't want to establish a precedent around here, that's why.
That's awfully good. Laugh at him, boys.
Well, at least they were together. That's more than I can say about their music. Zowie!
What happened?
Jack thought he said something funny.
It's a fine bunch I'm associated with.
What's the matter with you, Jack? Every year you pick a fight with us.
Well, what about it?
Last year it was just before Christmas, too.
Well, I like to do my Christmas scrapping early.
Jack, why don't you consider my suggestion and make up with Phil? How about it, Phil?
Well, I'm willing if that horseless cowboy is.
Yeah? Well, I'm not a horseless cowboy.
No, you're a brainless master of ceremonies.
Oh, yeah? That means fight in my country. I wish we were there.
Gee, a little geography saves Jack a lot of trouble.
Yeah. There'd be a lot of trouble right now if it wasn't that Kenny has to sing his songs.
I can wait, Jack.
You'll sing when you're supposed to, not when you're ready.
Oh, this thing's getting worse and worse. Come on, Jack. Now, make up with Phil. What do you say?
No, Don. I realize this is the time of year when we must forgive and forget. But even this holiday spirit cannot erase the scar that has been etched into my heart.
Oh, Jack, you're making a scar out of a molehill.
No, I'm not. Did you ever hear that famous poem by Ludwig Schmutz?
Changed authors
that
tonight.
That poem called Bear It With a Grin?
No.
Well, it goes something like this. When your soul is torn asunder by some fellow's thoughtless blunder and your trouble deep down under, bear it with a grin. When he makes your life so dreary and your eyes with tears are bleary and you're, oh, so gosh darn weary, ha ha, bear it with a grin.
Manny.
So if your false friend should forsake you and a fool he tries to make you, point at him and say, you snake, you. And
I say it with a groan.
Thank you. Well, I guess you know how I feel about it now, Don. Sing, Kenny.
And my poems are supposed to be bad.
Jealous of the moon, jealous of a summer night in June. Why can they remain beside my darling while I must leave so soon? Summer night. With a thousand eyes.